Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Coco Express, part of the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your host on the Coco Express is Aurelia Lyles. She's all about keeping it real. Great guests, interesting topics, so get on board. Listen, learn, live.
Hey everybody, it's Aurelia, and I'm the Coco Express Show, and we're coming to you live for Wednesday the 15th of August 2012. I have to tell you, I am coming down off of my Olympic mania high, and I just so sad that the Olympics are over, and I'm like, there's really nothing interesting to watch on TV. However, but I still have a show, and that's why I'm here today. Because last week we had scheduled Vivian Scott Choose to be on the show, and she's supposed to be with us again today. Hopefully, she had some technological issues that prevented her from being on the show at that particular time, and hopefully those issues have been addressed, and she will be able to join us today. But in the meantime, while we wait for her to join us, I can give you my Olympic journey. I have decided, I believe that she's with us today. So skip the Olympic journey. Allow me to tell you a little bit about Ms. Chu. Vivian Scott Chu happens to be an amazing, phenomenal woman. What she has been able to do has changed the way that we view and hear music globally, which is very interesting because she initially got her start. She was the director of A&R at Polygram Records, and then she also became the vice president of A&R at Epic Records. Her time there, she was able to do some really remarkable things. She introduced the world to reggae, the reggae recording artist Shabba Ranks, and she also became the first African-American female membership representative at ASCAP. And with that, she also founded the ASCAP Rhythm and Soul Awards, which is now their staple event. It's been that way for over 25 years. And once she left there, she transcended into another phase and another level of how we view and hear music today. She created an organization. She is the private principal and owner of Time Zone International. And it is the way that we view music globally as opposed to just here in the United States. She is the only one who is responsible for building a relationship with the recording artists and the European world in certain areas. She provides marketing, promotion, touring, licensing, distribution services, and it's really interesting. She's also the one that spearheaded the McDonald's I'm Loving It campaign before the internet and social media was like a hot ticket item. So she's been ahead of the curve. So by the time we get to the top of the curve, she's already moving on to another curve. And in addition to that, there's so many different facets of this woman. It's just so amazing. She is an amazing woman. She and her husband, Mr. Ray Chu, who is also the musical director for American Idol, they co-own Chu Entertainment, and they're a premier event production firm. And their clients are Carnegie Hall, the National Urban League, BET Networks, NAACP, the New York Mission Society, American Heart Association, the National Association for Black-Owned Broadcasters. And they do events like the NAACP Awards, music for those particular kinds of things. And now they are really taking it to the next level because not only have they given us things that we can look at and see and have seen over the years, now they're projecting their vision into the future. They have an organization called Power to Inspire, and now they're working with our youth. And this is where I stop and our interview begins with Ms. Vivian Satchu.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are you today?
I am so good. How are you?
I am good, and I'm so glad you were able to be back with us again.
Thank you. Thank you. How have you been?
I've been okay. I was saying I was on the Olympic high. I don't know what to do with myself now.
Yeah, pretty amazing time, particularly an amazing time to be a Black woman in America, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. I mean, they really showed how much power we really do possess. We really do put it out there when we need to. And I was just,
amen.
I mean, yes, and I was just so in awe of the. I know what it takes to get to that level, and I understand the dedication, the commitment, the sacrifices that get you to that level, but to see it in action and to see the end results the way it is, it's just marvelous, just marvelous. It brings tears to my eyes and everything. And you, like the women in the Olympics, you too have done some amazing things that have set the stage for how we view and hear music in our own lifetime.
Well, you know, I'm one of many. There are some very broad shoulders that I stepped on to get to where I am, and I'm just blessed to still be doing it after this year makes 31 years that I've been involved in the music industry. It's a real honor.
Well, you, as they say, you got to be good because you're still doing it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, you, let's see. I know where to begin, but I don't know where to begin because you've got so many things that you have been involved in. But we're going to talk more. We're going to speak about the power to inspire because it seems as if, and there was a conversation I was having with this woman. She is a retired professor, and she was telling me about the Mayan code in 2012. And she said, you know, when 2012 comes, it's not going to be the end of the world. It's going to be the changing of mindsets and the mindset of the people. And the focus is going to be on the youth. And I was like, that's really interesting. Because as it appears, since 2012 has come in, if you notice, a lot of the major changes that have happened have been involving our youth. And
that's a really good point. You know, it's interesting that that's how she phrased it, because I remember everybody was, last year, it was all about, you know, 2012 was going to be the end. And I think that 2011 was actually, I agree with her, the end of a certain mindset, but also the end of the way that we see things, the way that we do. And if that change is in focusing on the next generation and that generation afterwards and making sure that there's an earth still there for them to enjoy by, you know, us being much more green conscious, or if there's a shift in our spirituality and we get sort of back to the old way of doing things. And if nothing else, if we just slow down a little bit more, then that's the kind of change I would like to see.
Yes, and with that in mind, you have this wonderful foundation called Power to Inspire. Now, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Power to Inspire is new. We are still going through our 501c3 status situation, but it will be up and running fully on its own legs within the next couple of months. And Power to Inspire is just something that Ray and I sat down one day and just sort of looked around at the landscape of our lives, and we're just very overwhelmed on how two people, you know, two young kids who grew up in very modest situations were just at the right place at the right time, prepared for the opportunities that have come to us, and out of that has come success. And we would like to pass that on to the next generation of either kids who want to follow in Ray's footsteps in a very creative way as a musician and a musician / business person, or in my steps, which is a step of someone who went through the corporate world and is now a entrepreneur. There were a lot of pitfalls, a lot of lessons that we learned along the way, and we would like to be able to share some of our experiences, that if we can just make the journey a little bit lighter, a little bit straighter for someone else than we've done our job.
That's great, because as I know that having, you know, being a parent myself, and when my daughter was coming up, you know, we found it difficult to find the right kinds of programs that I took advantage of when I was a youth, because it seems as if at that time it was a coming of age and they were allowing more programs as being open for us to explore different options and opportunities. And as soon as they saw the success in those programs, it seemed like they just shut the doors and left our kids out there wondering where will they go next. And to have an organization like this is great. I really think it's great, and we really need to have a lot more of them. But what is your take on the reason why there are so few organizations like yours out there?
You know, I think that there probably are quite a few. It's just that it's hard to fund a non-for-profit organization. You have to sort of have a for-profit entity that funds the non-profit. So it takes a lot of time to cultivate relationships, to have the right people around you who know how to access money. There's a lot of free government money that's out there, but I think the majority of it comes from the private sector and people who really do believe in your vision. And I think that there are quite a few people who aspire to do what we're doing or who are doing it. They're just not really getting the big bucks. I mean, everybody knows about VH1 Music Cares. I'm sure that there's 100 smaller foundations around the world that cater to help children in the musical arts that we just don't know about, And I plan on making sure that people know about ours.
Okay, great. I'm sure you will. And it's just, in addition to, like, they're gonna have, like, music lessons and music workshops and stuff, and the foundation for, like, forming a business and how to, and in regards to the business aspect of it, what are you going to kind of, like, teach the youth that come into your organization?
But I think we need to look at what are going to be the future opportunities in music and music/entertainment. Ray and I specialize in music as part of the entertainment field, but we will be calling on our colleagues who are in film, who are in TV. I mean, there's music everywhere, and there's different ways to make income, not just the most obvious ones of being an entertainer. You know, there's songwriting, or just being a publisher and having songwriters signed to you and getting music in film and in TV and in commercials and, you know, this wonderful world of the internet, which is, just makes things boundless. There are no boundaries now when it comes to getting out information and reaching certain demographics that you're trying to reach from a marketing and a promotion standpoint. So one of the things that we're doing is that we are holding small focus groups of kids and finding out what is it that they want to learn, what is it that they're most interested in, and really tailor this program to what it is they want as opposed to what we think they want. I'm hoping that we're going about that correctly.
Oh, that sounds great. It really does sound like you are going in the right direction by having those focus groups, because children have no problem telling you what they want. And I'm sure. And what I found is, you know, our youth are so creative. I mean, they've taken this technology that we have and they've taken it to so many different levels. It's amazing to see the things that they've created. You know, I know I didn't have technology like this when I was growing up. So we created things from, like, old soda cans and we, you know, those different kinds of things we did. But now they are really creating, at young ages of 10 and 12, 14, their own businesses where they're actually doing something that is productive. And it's, you know, it's amazing. But it still leaves an important point that as far as other countries are concerned, we are lagging. We're lacking in some issues in some areas as well. And I always tied in the creative arts aspect of this, of education, with the ability to be able to excel. I don't know if you've heard this, but children who are involved in music have higher math scores.
That's not surprising.
And, you know, when they started to take all the music programs out of the schools and stuff like that, they took away the creative aspect of the child's mind, because the creativity is what enables you to allow yourself to open up, to be able to absorb the other stuff that's coming in. And
yeah, that's sad. You know, it's, I didn't know anyone in my grade when I was, you know, going through grade school that didn't have something to do after school. You know, I just think just after school programs, not necessarily just music programs, but just, you know, after school sports programs. You know, we all had different clubs that we were involved in, you know, book reading clubs. You know, when you give a kid an awful lot of free time, especially our children who are latchkey kids whose parents have to work, and you've got that three-hour gap between when mom or mom and dad come home and when school's out, that's what allows the opportunity for a kid to get in trouble and for kids' minds to sit and idle. And, you know, we've allowed video games and TV to become the main source of information for our children, as opposed to parents and just sitting and talking. Something as simple as sitting down and having a meal with your kid and going, so how was the end of the day? You know, we just, we're moving so fast, and people have to work, you know, not just one job, but two jobs just to make ends meet. And our kids end up sort of kind of growing up themselves. And unfortunately, their role models tend to be people that we sometimes don't want them to be when they really should be us. And when I say us, I mean the community.
Yes, yes, because it does take a village to raise a child, and that is just so true. In fact, you know, I know that when I was coming up, you couldn't do anything in the neighborhood because you had the lady from down the street. She was on the telephone calling your grandmother and letting her know. And so when you got in the door, your grandmother's waiting there for you, telling you, I told your mother, so when she gets home, you're going to hear it. And
oh,
I told you, and I told your dad.
Miss Susie down the street.
Yes.
Miss Susie down the street. Who was also given the ability to discipline you on her own.
Yes.
And then when you came home, you got it another time. So, I remember that scenario quite fondly.
Yes. And I was like, but I just came around the corner. How do you know? Because she was watching. And that also made you be mindful, and you were very respectful also to your adults. A lot of our youth have limited socialization skills because of the fact that they just communicate with each other. And they don't have the opportunity to communicate with an older adult, you know, to correct them and tell them. So we have a, you know, there's a lot of work that we need to do. And it's not like it's like a lost cause, a hopeless situation. No, it is a great opportunity for us to be able to turn things around and make things better. And, you know, Power to Inspire is a vehicle to do just that as well.
Thank you. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
That's our hope. That's our hope.
Yes, most definitely. And I think a few weeks ago we had Peter Westbrook on one of our segments, and he has the fencing program that he does in Harlem, and he also has an after-school program. And when he told his story about how he got into fencing to become the Olympic athlete that he was, it was to keep him off the streets, and his mother paid him to go to do this. And it's really interesting, you know, you have, I don't care how we have to get our kids to get involved in things, to bribe them, if that's the case, we have to, we really have to. And I mean, I was just so, I guess, inspired by the fact that you were going to have this organization for, you know, for the young adults and as well as the youth to be able to have this. And, you know, it's just, And I get so, I guess you can see I'm frustrated in some respects because I get so upset when I know that once the school doors close at 3 o'clock, there's nothing to do. That bothers me.
Yeah, and that's a reality, and that's a reality particularly for our children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those programs that were free or you paid minimally for are all gone. You know, not everybody has the kind of income to, you know, have our child in private piano lessons and,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of the things that some of our cultural counterparts have. But, like you said, the woman who told you in 2012 that our mindset was going to change and we were going to focus on our children, I really do hold on to that.
Yes. Well, it's holding true to what she said as well because the news has been very clear with what they're saying in regards to the children. Protect the children. Be mindful of the kids. Keep an eye on your kids. Watch out where they're going. Look at what they're doing. And they're saying this. The media says a lot of things. And a lot of it gets glossed over. A lot of it gets tossed out of the window. But if you really look and listen very carefully, they're telling you, pay attention to your kids. You have to. It's imperative and it's important. And we can't just let them, you know, just roam around aimlessly because they are our future.
That's right. And absolutely.
Yes, and we really have to make sure we keep an eye on our future. That's if we want one.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, you said it perfectly.
Yes. Now, you are also currently preparing a campaign for JoJo's return. Really?
Now, JoJo, not as in Casey and JoJo.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay. Who I would, you know, love to be involved in anything that either one of those brothers do because they really, truly are talented and gave us an awful lot of years of musical joy.
Mm-hmm.
But this is JoJo. This JoJo is a little girl that I started working with when she was 12 years old. She's now 21. She's signed to Black Rod Records, which is also the home of Aaliyah. And JoJo came out with a big record probably about 5 years ago, and I got to tour with her around the world and help her via our international marketing and promotion to sell millions of records around the world. And she is now finally putting out another album on Black Rod Records as well. And I am actually in L.A. with her, getting her international campaign together. We just did her video yesterday and just getting everything aligned up to do a real global attack again on the world. She's so talented. You know, she's a little girl who's from Boston, who is white and who has this big, big urban sounding voice. She would just never expect this voice to come out of this body. And so she's one of a few artists that I was able to work with in the beginning of the career and that we've come back full circle again to work again. So I'm very excited for her.
Now, when you work with people on the, let's just say, for example, you have on your roster of talent, of recording artists, you have Jill Scott, Lil Wayne, Toni Braxton, Kim, B.B. Wynans. Now, when you work with them in the international realm, let's just say, for instance, we got the, I'm still in an Olympic mind frame. I can't get it off my head. We have the 2016 Olympics coming up in Brazil. Would you have artists out there involved in that?
I'm already focused on that. I'm even focused on 2014 World Cup is in Brazil.
Okay.
And, and it's a great opportunity. And it's also the first time that a South American a South American country has hosted the Olympics. So it's going to be a really big deal. And I think what we need to realize is that Brazil is just an amazing country. It's millions of people that look like us who love music. I mean, music is a big export item for Brazil as well as their intake of music from all cultures. Their economy is so strong. They have the ninth strongest economy in the world. They're a little bit behind in us in technology, but catching up very, very fast. So it is a country that is green and prime for anyone who wants to do not only business like what we do, which is going to be importing artists into the country for the World Cup and beyond, and the Olympics and beyond, but also for any business person who is savvy enough to figure out what the void is in that country and know that the entire world is going to be watching Brazil in 2014 and 2016. So it's a prime opportunity for people in various different sectors of business. But we are speaking with promoters and organizers down there in trying to figure out what is the musical entity that they want and how we can be a part of that. I'm very, very excited about that opportunity.
Yeah, because I was looking at the map of countries and places that you cover, and I was like, Brazil, wow, this is interesting.
We got introduced to Brazil via the McDonald's through that campaign that we were asked to come in and work along with the mainstream publicity company that they had, a mainstream ad company. We were the company that had to connect the dots directly to the younger demographics in each one of these territories and have them walking around going, I'm loving it. Mm-hmm. We had to do it in various different ways. And we had done a little bit of work in Brazil prior, but that was really an eye-opener for us. If nothing else, to just realize how big Brazil is, how vast it is. I mean, it's huge. You know, look at a map and see what a big country it is. And Brazilian music is such a big part of their whole culture. So they're open and they're primed for good music to come into their country, and that's what we're going to be doing.
Oh, great. So you're the one responsible for, let's just, you know, having the artist be acknowledged and recognized. In some cases, in some of the countries that you go to, are they aware of who the American artists are that you're sending over or not?
Most of the time, they're all aware. There is a love and a loyalty and a passion I find from international fans, but it's very different from fans here in the U.S. I think we got so much music that comes at us every single day. And, I watch young kids a lot. I watch them a lot, and I watch their habits. And so we have bred this fast food, quote-unquote, fast food generation that just wants things now and quick and fast. It was just in Huffington Post yesterday that the number one source of how young people listen to their music is on YouTube.
Oh, wow.
So you're talking about an entity that originally was for us to connect visually by watching videos. It has now become the number one source of kids to hear music. That's over radio, that's over cable TV, because we don't really have video shows much anymore. They've all turned into reality shows.
Mm-hmm.
So with YouTube being the main source, well, as long as you can get a signal, you can get a broadband signal or a Wi-Fi signal, you've got access to YouTube. So YouTube has become a prime marketing vehicle for us to reach who we want. And it's such a joy when I do take artists overseas who have never been overseas before, and we go to places where we can barely get a sentence or two out and be understood because we're in a foreign country. The minute they hit that stage and they go to one of their hit songs and that audience starts singing along, I mean, that's really great. That's a great feeling for an artist to know that they're sitting in their studio in New York or L.A. or Atlanta or Omaha, Nebraska, and that there's a kid in Berlin and London and Paris and Johannesburg who they affected with their music and with their lyrics, and they created an emotion, and there was a story told from them that's very, very personal. Music is very, very personal to fans. And so I would say probably 90% of the time when the artists that I've been affiliated with do go outside of the United States, they're known, and they're just known from not only what's current, but their catalog.
Okay.
They will research. They will find that record on vinyl that was put out 20 years ago that even sometimes the artists themselves forget about.
Really? So they're a little bit more savvy in Europe than here.
They're a little more loyal. You know, I got the opportunity, was very blessed to have taken Nick Ashford, the late Nick Ashford, and his lovely wife, Valerie Simpson, about 5-6 years ago when we took them over to Europe for the first time in 20 years. We did two shows. We did one in the UK, in Manchester, and we did one in Amsterdam. And Valerie, as you know, she's been playing the piano, and she was having a really good time, and she said, well, what else are you guys going to hear? And people started shouting out songs, and you could just see the look on her face of, she was astonished that people knew of their catalog as deeply as they did. And on a couple of times, she started playing a song and going, I haven't played that song since I recorded it. I can't believe you remember that. So I think there is a nostalgia that exists. You know, people really like to read liner notes and know who the musicians are and who engineered a record and, you know, really, really get into who that artist is as opposed to that current song that the artist is involved in. So I get a lot of gratification.
Okay. Now, with the Chew Entertainment aspect, how do you put on such a grand production? It must take a bazillion people to get some of these productions that you do done.
I say my husband Ray Chu and myself have through the years acquired and cultivated just some really, really great relationships, whether it's been with artists directly or their agents and their managers, but also the people who help make us look good, because Ray and I can sit and we can put together creatively a show and what a run of show is going to look like, and then Ray just kicks in his musical genius and can chart out songs and put together orchestras and rhythm sections, and all that's great. But if you have a stage manager that doesn't know when it's time for the artist to go on stage or for a video screen to come down, or if you have a front of house sound engineer that doesn't realize that the mics aren't up, then you don't have a good show. It really, really is a joint effort, creatively as well as technically, to deliver a good show.
So, because I've watched, you know, the NAACP Awards, and it is amazing to see that. And I've often sat back and said, it must take, I feel like years in planning this, because it's so detailed and intricate and so just beautifully done. And I'm like, every detail is kind of like to the, you know, you've captured everything to the T in detail. And I'm a detailed person, so I notice those things. And I'm saying to myself, it must take a lot of planning to get this. How long does it take in planning when you're doing these events?
Just to correct you, we are really part of a huge team and a machine. Ray and I were asked to produce an East Coast segment of the show. It is really taped live from L.A., and there are people who are just so experienced in how to make something like that happen. I can tell you, even though we're not directly involved in the L.A. portion, that just our East Coast portion, which was filmed from the New Jersey Performing Arts Center in Newark, New Jersey, you know, it took months of planning just for a segment which was honoring Kathy Hughes, who is the chair of Radio 1 and TV 1. Mm-hmm. And we had Brian McKnight and Layla Hathaway as performers, but we had no room for mistake. When you're going live, there's no room for mistake. You know, Ray is the musical producer for the BET shows, and BET Awards are live. And so I get to watch that very upfront and close. And just the months it takes to book talent, to clear songs. I mean, there's no artist can perform a song on TV without it being cleared by whoever owns it, you know, the master rights owner as well as the publisher. So you've got to do that. There's stage blocking. There's hiring of crews. It's dealing with unions, because every person, every worker on the stage is a part of a union. You've got to deal with that. You know, the TV aspect, and just praying that when you say cut to whatever you're cutting to, that that person is sitting in and ready to move. So it really is a big thing. TV is very interesting when it comes to the musical part of it. You really get one chance to get it right. So you look at all of these shows that are live, like the Oscars and Emmys, and it really takes professionals, and Ray and I have been in the company of some amazing people, and we were able to learn our craft that way.
Okay, that's really interesting, because sometimes I'm like, I don't know, if I would be able to. Well, I guess if I had the experience and expertise, I would be. But there are some things that just catch you off guard, and at some in some instances on some of the live performances, you've seen some glitches happen and stuff. But that's expected when you're live sometimes as well. But I'm still just in awe of how these things go off so seamlessly. It's just amazing. And I have to say thank you, because, part of what you do is making some of this happen. And I happen to be one of those people that sits in front of the TV set, even though I try to deny it. But I do. I like to watch a little bit of TV. And it's an educational process, because I'm looking at it from a different perspective. I'm looking at how things are done as opposed to what's really being said and done. And, okay, now, moving on, let's see. You were just recently named a member of the board of directors for the New Jersey Performing Arts Center. Congratulations. That's great. Now,
actually, as a curator, I'm working along with the board of directors for the New Jersey Performing Arts Center as a curator.
Okay.
So what I do is come up with programming ideas for the theater, and they've really given me full rein in being able to bring whatever creative ideas I have to the theater, and we are partnering with them. My first two projects are the Women's Association Gala of New Jersey Performing Arts Center. We are replicating a show that we did at Carnegie Hall earlier this year called A Tribute to the Music of Motown. We'll be doing that in October there. And then in December, I get to work with one of my favorite artists, which is George Clinton. We're doing a tribute to funk with Morris Day and the Time and George Clinton, which is also going to include a Q&A with George the day before, that we are putting through the public school system in North New Jersey, so that we can talk to some kids and let them understand who this man is and the influence of his music on the world.
Oh, wow. That is excellent. That should be a lot of fun. Really. Interesting. That's great. And, okay, so now I understand exactly how everything fits in. You have a very interesting life.
I have a very blessed life. I really do. I have no complaints. I have no complaints.
Oh, great. Now, if people wanted to, get in contact with you or learn more about you, how would they be able to do that?
Mm-hmm. Our website, timezoneinternational.com, is up right now, but it's about to be taken down, so that the new and improved, the 2.0 version of our website is going to launch very shortly. I am on Facebook, and I tweet at Vivian Scott Chu is my Twitter name.
Mm-hmm.
And you can always reach me. You can always email me at info@timezoneinternational.com. That comes directly to me.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, it is always a pleasure having you. And I learned so much, whether it sounds as if I do or not. I do learn a great deal from you each and every time that we talk. And you inspire me to fine-tune whatever it is that I'm doing to get to a level where I, too, can have all of this going on, because you have a lot on your plate. In addition to being a mother and, a wife, that's a heavy load.
Well, let's add one more layer. I'm also a grandmother. I'm a very proud grandmother of a little boy who's about to be, thank you, he's going to be four. And it's a joy to be able to see not only the generation after me, but that other generation behind that generation. And I get to influence a little young African-American boy in his journey in this world. So I would say, you know, probably out of all the titles that I hold, the title of being a grandmother to someone is something that I hold with a lot of joy and a lot of esteem. It's my favorite title.
Oh, that's great. And it is a testament to who you are, because it's just such a warming quality, I can put it that way. You know, it makes you, you know, and because it can be said that someone in your position is not so easily accessible, but that's not the case with you. And that's the reason why I really enjoy having you on the show and speaking with you.
Well, thank you so much, and it's been great speaking with you again, and it's always an honor that you think that I am even worthy to be speaking with you and to your listeners, so I thank you for that opportunity.
Yes. So Power to Inspire is in the stages of being finalized as far as the 501c and all that other stuff. When do you expect it to be up and running fully?
Fully by first quarter of 2013, we're actually doing some pilot seminars and programs in New York right now at the moment, just so that we can get the program lean and tight. And then in January, we'll be up and running, and we've been talking to different churches that we want to take it to. We've been talking to different school districts and just trying to figure out how we can get the best reach of the message that we're trying to get across. So please keep that and us in prayer. That is definitely a vision that is very important to us, and that it's not only that it's done, but that it's done correctly.
Okay, that is, you got it. You asked, you got it. And
Thank you.
You know, that's a no-brainer right there. So, and we'll listen out to hear things, and that, you know, you want to come back when, you know, it's officially launched, and you want to, you know, let us know where the youth can come and to find out more information and so on and so forth, please feel free to come back and let us know.
Thank you so much, and you have a blessed evening.
You too. Thank you again.
Okay.
Talk to you
soon.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
Everyone, that was Vivian Scott Chu, and she is such an amazing woman, and the different things that she's done in regards to the entertainment industry and what she's doing with Power to Inspire is phenomenal. And once we have more information and details as to when it's going to be officially launched and how your children can get involved, we will be sure to come back to you with that information. Once again, we're coming to the close of our show. Tomorrow we're going to have a very special show on. It's going to be with Gloria Fisher. She has, her son has been in prison, and she has special requests from us. So normally we at the Global Express do the feel-good kind of show, but this is something that I think that you should really pay attention to and listen to. So please take the opportunity to come back to us tomorrow at 8 p.m., and we'll have Gloria Fisher on the show to discuss her son's current predicament and how and see what she wants from us to do to help her with her situation. We'll be again back on Saturday at 12:30 with Paradigm Shifters Principal Select Success with Steve Duncanson. He's got a special message for us in regards to the impression that we leave, making an impression or leaving a mark on the world. So that'll be the kind of like the topic, so to speak. I'm being kind of loose with the topic, but that's kind of like what we're going to be talking about at that time. So I will hear from me tomorrow. And I would like to thank Double Exposure for the opportunity that they provided to us with Ms. Scott Chu coming on to the show. And I would like to thank my listeners for their continued support. And with that in mind, I'm going to leave you all. You have a great evening. Be safe, be well, and get good rest. Goodbye.
That's our show for today. So until next time, keep it real, listen, learn, and live.